Hello and welcome to AFPT Comics Podcast. We're on episode 94. Holy crap. It's the week of October 14th when new comic books came out this week. And my name is David Brook. We're here on the Comics Podcast. And we've been here for 94 weeks, Forrest. How you doing?
Hey, this is Forrest with 2 R's. I'm doing well. You know, good, funny, good, great week of comics.
We still need to figure out what we're going to do for the 100th episode.
But yeah, if you have any ideas, tweet them at me.
Hell yeah.
Or better yet, write a review for our show on iTunes.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
We're going to get a bunch of reviews that just have suggestions for the 100th episode, which is fine. But I'll only read them and respond to them if they're 5 stars.
We could do like our top 100 comics, maybe.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Top 100 heroes. No. Top 100 creators. No.
Oh, man.
Top 100 ketchup flavors.
Hey, I've got 57 Heinz recipes ready to go.
We should just redo that bit.
Let's do it twice.
We just redo every bit that we liked from the last 100 episodes. Yeah. Oh, it'd be like a clip show in, for sitcoms where they just replay old clips.
Oh, yes. And all we have to do is do the, like, in-between bits. Hey, do you remember when...
Dun, 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 dun,
and then just play the
audio. Right. We'll just... And we won't even, like, worry about, like, how it slaps together.
Nope.
We'll just be like, okay... Here's our favorite interview.
I don't want to equalize it. I want the volumes to be all over the place.
Yes.
I want us to do episodes where we have like Nathan on or bits from interviews. And don't explain who the people are, the other voices.
But no, yes, this is the comic book podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week. We pick our favorite comics of the week and we talk about the week ahead. This week, there is some really big news. So we're going to dive right into the news. DC Future State was revealed, and DC Comics is very good about just giving you all the details all at once instead of like slowly revealing covers and creators and stuff like Marvel Comics might do. So DC Future State is a new 2-month event starting in January, and it looks like an Elseworlds style event. There's actually a kind of a description of what it is, and I'll just read it to you really quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
In DC Future State, the multiverse has been saved from the brink of destruction. That is referring to, of course, Death Metal, Dark Knight's Death Metal. I'm going to just do asides throughout this, apparently. But the triumph of DC's heroes has shaken loose the very fabric of time and space. The final chapter, got ahead of myself, of Dark Knight's Death Metal January 5th, 2021, brings new life to DC's multiverse, kicking off this glimpse into the unwritten worlds of DC's future. Sunday.
On Tuesdays. Sundays on Tuesdays, DC Future State.
On the CW.
The event, yeah, will include DC Comics' biggest creators like Mariko Tamaki, Brian Michael Bendis, Gene Luen Yang, Joelle Jones, Joshua Williamson, Nicholas Scott, Cully Hamner, Don Timms, John Ridley, Megan Fitzmartin, L.L. McKinney, a bunch of other names in here, a bunch of books coming out of this. I'm really interested. I'm real hot on the idea of a Batgirls by Vita Ayala. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. There's tons of stuff here. Dark Detective, Grifter is back.
Yes, by Matthew Rosenberg.
Yeah. Red Hood by Joshua Williamson. Actually, this looks like we will never know the extent to which this is what I'm about to say it is, which is a salvaged 5G.
Right.
I think that the new editorial team at DC, which is partially in place due to the shakeup from Warner Brothers, the restructuring, quite a few people lost their jobs, and I still feel bad about that. Not that I'm personally responsible, but, you know, being cognizant of that, we now have two female executive editors in place. Quite a few of the other editors are people of color. And I think that an editorial team that is both new and as diverse as it is in place of what has been at DC for a long time is very eager to prove itself or to prove themselves.
Right.
And I, for one, am looking forward to this. I don't know if this is a Lucy holding the football situation where I'm like going to be interested in Future State and then they're going to pull it out from under me. And yes, it is only set up to last for 2 months. But I think I'm kind of interested in how they're going all in on it. There's an 80-page one-shot introductory issue that's launching at $10.
They're serious
about it. And obviously it's very fast. That they're going through this, and I'm not sure what the final effect will be on the DC continuity during or after this. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the way DC has been going lately,
tell it to us straight.
2 months of something else sounds good to me.
Right. And this looks like a really fresh take on almost every character. Yep. It has a different costume. It feels youthful in a way.
I think that the only one that is continuing some threads from the previous DC continuity is Flash.
Right. Yeah. Because you can see, I think there's the, what is that? That chair that he's got. Mm. There's a shot of him in that. But everything else looks completely different. Like Ram V's Swamp Thing with Mike Perkins looks crazy good. And yeah, there's a lot of women writers involved with this, including Nicola Scott and Marguerite Bennett, and Marguerite Savage, who all three were really big part of DC for a little while there, and then they kind of got away from it.
Right.
And there are rumors of why, but it's good to see them getting back into things like this.
And there are also some other threads that were introduced in other books that haven't been explored. You know, I saw Steve Orlando say, hey, maybe this is why we introduced the other Wonder Woman tribe, or the other Amazonian tribe. Yep.
And I saw that tweet.
That character is very much on the cover of a Wonder Woman book and a Superman and Wonder Woman book. So they're definitely, it's like a remix, reboot, in continuity, out of continuity. I don't know. Elseworlds is probably the best way to put it.
Right, and it further confirms that John Ridley, the Oscar-winning screenwriter, is doing a Batman that's not necessarily part of the mainline continuity now, and it's called The Next Batman, which we already kind of learned about at the DC fandom
event. It was rumored quite heavily before that, too.
Right, yeah, for a while we all thought Ridley was taking over the mainline book, but apparently that may not have ever been in the cards.
I do think that this was meant to be a reboot, a line-wide reboot, in the vein of 5G. We will never know what percentage of this is stuff that would have happened in 5G and what percentage of it is new or in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And who knows if Dan Didio or whoever can even ever say anything about it. But I mean, the rumor initially was that Tinian was only filling in on Batman between King and Ridley. So
up to 100, Batman 100.
Right. So if we were to take this and say, okay, well, this was 5G, then it's probably true that Ridley was supposed to take over Batman after Tinian. But that I know Tinian is now on it indefinitely.
Right.
Because it's performing very well, thanks to Punchline.
If the pandemic didn't happen, when do you suppose this was supposed to happen? Like in the fall? Must be right?
Yeah, probably.
Because I assume the death metal would have been done by the fall.
I think it would have taken place over the summer. Because we knew a bunch of details about 5G, and Didio was posting that picture of the giant whiteboard and stuff in his office, like, in March.
But then death metal wasn't supposed to start till April.
Death metal was supposed to be shorter, though.
Right, they did add all those one-shots for the fall. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's always fun when they shake things up like this. And I'm very grateful that they told us 2 months.
Yeah.
They didn't just go, hey, here's a new thing. And then we'll all have to speculate that this could be the new normal for the next year.
Yeah. It really put a cap on the discourse too, which I appreciate. People being like, well, how are they going to end this book or that book before this? I understand people may be concerned about their books continuing, other continuities books continuing through this 2 month period. DC will figure it out. They're eager to prove themselves not only to consumers, but to Warner Brothers, and then also to retailers, because they are very much still in the throes of divorcing themselves from Diamond.
Right. Oh, that's some news we should talk about as well. Go ahead.
Full returnability.
Full returnability. That's huge. Especially for an event like this, because I was reading actually it was a thread on Reddit. People were talking like, comic book shops, when something like this comes along, they have no idea how many to order of any book.
Right.
So making full returnability makes it so they can literally just pick up 15 issues of every book on this list. And if you go to aiptcomics.com, there's a full story about this. You can see all the titles and covers, a lot of the covers in one place. They can order 20 of these each and know that they're not going to take a huge hit and have to hold the bag, right?
Right, absolutely.
So that's going to probably increase sales even further than what it would have already done.
The last thing that I wanted to say is, some of these books are priced much higher. They're ranging from $3.99 all the way up to $9.99. Mm-hmm. And the structure breaks down to, it's $3 for every 8 pages of comic. Uniformly across all the books, that's exactly how much it costs. They also have the cardstock covers. So I'm not certain if LCSs get a larger percentage of those books. The higher price ones, and also the cardstock variants.
Right.
It's possible that they do, in which case DC is really going out of their way to make LCSs happy.
Right.
And I know from personal experience that my retailer is now getting most of the DC books on time, mm-hmm. which they weren't when they divorced from Diamond initially, but they have their books on Tuesdays now. So.
Right. That's good.
Does anyone care about that?
If the books come in on time?
On Tuesdays. Mm. Because I would say you and I are very plugged into the comic scene.
Yeah.
And I only see people talk about DC on Wednesdays.
Yeah, I know. I retweet reviews sometimes because I think people forget.
Right.
Creators even forget if the book has already been out or not. I checked in at Kamikaze, local comic shop here, a couple weeks ago, and I asked about this. And she said, you know, people still kind of just come in on Wednesdays. They're not coming in to get their DC books on Tuesdays. Why? Not to mention right. because there's a pandemic and right. don't want to, you right. know, put yourself in a position where you're near people twice a week and just do it once. So, but yeah, she also confirmed like the books are coming in on time now.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't know. I think they have inadvertently created a day to avoid spoilers.
Yeah.
Because, like, if the book is out on Tuesday, you can read with it and engage with it on Tuesday, but people end up talking about it on Wednesday anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have a day. I don't know. It's a nice buffer.
I have to say, as someone who manages the AIPT Twitter and, you know, has been doing this for 9 years, it has stretched out new comic book day in an interesting way where it used to be like all the traffic was Wednesday and it was like hard to tweet everything on that one day. But now DC's made it so it's like it's 2 days of in a row of like a lot of traffic and a lot of tweeting and stuff, which is kind of interesting. I wonder what if another publisher was like, we're going to come out Thursday.
Yeah. I would really love to see kind of what the internal conversations about the Tuesday thing are like, because you would think that they're putting a higher pressure on their new partner.
What do you mean by new partner?
Meaning Lunar and the other distributors that they're using to say, hey, these used to come out on Wednesday, but we need them to come out on Tuesday. Oh, and also you don't have all the infrastructure that Diamond has set up? Like, it's
right,
we were just talking about them getting up to speed, and it seems like they're up to speed now.
Like, logistically, no one is shipping on Sunday, right? So you're literally taking a day away from the shipping, but also the comic book shops have to get the books.
Right.
Open the boxes, right? Look at what they've got, mm-hmm. then put them on the shelves. Like that, it is kind of reducing the amount of time they have.
Yeah. All things consider as we track how successful Future State is. But I do have to say that I'm more positive on this than anything DC is doing besides the YA stuff.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
The ink line.
The article we also put up on the site, it has some details about the Batman family, the Justice League family, and the Superman family, giving you some idea of where these stories are going, so it's worth checking out. But moving on, I don't know if you're sick of talking about events, but Marvel released a ton of tie-in information for King in Black books coming out in January, including Cy Spurrier and Jesus Saez doing King in Black Black Knight.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's so wild. I never, ever would have expected any of that. I wouldn't have expected Black Knight to be such a central figure in King in Black. And
they've been trying to bring him back. He was in Empire, but then, you know, of course, they scaled back the tie-ins.
Yeah, and then they did some editorial interviews where they were like, hey, he's going to be important pretty soon.
I think that
this is probably it. And maybe that's why Spurrier's attached to it.
He's going from Constantine to to Black Knight. Yeah. That's kind of neat as a British writer. Obviously, I think it's just a one-shot, though, but we'll see how people are receptive to it or not. There's also King in Black, Planet of the Symbiotes, which is an anthology series.
One of my favorite Venom stories of all time, Planet of the Symbiotes.
I'm expecting it to tie in pretty well, although the first issue is actually, it feels more like a continuation of Clay McLeod Chapman's Scream and Frank Thierry's Ravencroft, because apparently they are both picking up the stories where they left off with their miniseries that both ended a month or two, or 3 or 4 months ago now. So that's kind of interesting, although we'll see, because it's, this could be an ongoing, at least for a little while. But we'll see what it does with its storytelling. And then also there is a King in Black tie-in with Gwenom versus Carnage by Shauna Maguire and Flaviano. So they're basically carrying over their Ghost Spider story.
Which has ended.
And now she, Gwen has got the Venom symbiote and just, she's going nuts during this event, apparently.
Yeah. Can I say, the Gwenom design is one of the best designs in comics.
And it's getting a Marvel Legends figure soon. It's so cool,
the mouth like going all the way down the abdomen and the tongue hanging out the side and stuff. Robbie Rodriguez sucks. He's a creep and an abuser, but that is a hell of a design.
Yeah, the hood is kind of neat too, right?
Yes. The teeth.
Right.
Teeth.
Marvel will be releasing their full solicitations next week, so this is their, very common for them to give us all the details a little early and sprinkle it out.
We have to talk about it again next week or the week after also.
Although I got to say, dude, we pretty much talk about Marvel solicitations every month, and every month we were like, eh, it's already been talked about. True. Like,
because they do this. It's a treadmill.
So they also revealed the King in Black number 3 cover with featuring Thor fighting Null. Obviously, Donny Cates is trying to blend his Thor into this event. There was also the Return of the Valkyries that was revealed, which also includes
by Matthew.
Yes,
Rosenberg.
Thunderbolts. That's a shock because we haven't seen a Thunderbolts title in a while.
A very long time. Yeah, and yeah. Rosenberg is a higher profile name to be attached to it.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, they use events like this to stealth launch titles. So it's very possible that Thunderbolts, or maybe even Black Knight, will continue on out of this event.
And all those Rhino stands can finally get their fix. It's also drawn by Juan Ferreira, whose beautiful painterly quality will be interesting to see in this dark and obviously horror-ish book. Chip Zdarsky's also getting in on it with Daredevil and Deadpool 2 by Kelly Thompson and Gerardo Sandoval.
Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
The sequel.
Yeah, let's get it. So, I don't know. It looks cool, right? I mean, S.W.O.R.D. is also getting involved in this. It's kind of early, too early to tell what the hell is happening. Mean, is it just another War of the Realms? An alien force comes to Earth and everybody has to fight?
Yet another Empire, too.
Yeah.
Empire was a little different because we had characters that were, like, directly invested in the stakes that we knew about. As opposed to War of the Realms, kind of. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Again.
I don't really, like, who's the good guy in this? Because Venom doesn't even appear to be, like, I don't know, maybe he's central. He's probably central. But, like, in this King in Black number 3 cover, it's Thor who's the central character on the cover, anyway. Right.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because they have the kind of olden days story going on where, like, Grendel was fought off by Thor, Null's first incarnation, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
I can't wait for the next Marvel event where they finally get away from aliens attack Earth to Earth attacks aliens.
Yes! Taking the fight to them.
Exactly. Space Force. Let's flip the script. Yes.
Thank God.
Spaceballs. Yes.
Fucking hell.
Moving on. Some interesting news from Kodansha Comics came out this week. They will be releasing the chapter format of their manga same day as in Japan as in America in English. So that's interesting, because usually it takes a couple weeks, if not months, to get the translations going. This means they're like turning over the translations really, really quickly for Comixology and Comixology Unlimited readers. I think this is a first for manga, but I could be wrong. I'm not super tapped into
Crunchyroll. There are some things on Shonen Jump that release at the same time, but it's not the entire line. It's like select titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Kodansha is one of the bigger American manga companies going today, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
And then we've also got some indie comics news for you. Image Comics is launching a new anthology called Ha Ha. Is that how you say it? From W. Maxwell Prince. He's writing it, and it'll be an anthology with a new artist every issue. The first issue has Vanessa R. Del Rey
of Redlands.
From Redlands fame. Yeah. And some amazing other artists attached. Gabriel Walta is also attached to do this series. Do you like clowns, Forrest?
I don't particularly care for clowns or clown horror or clown comedy or tragedy or, you know, the clown genres, as we like to call them in the industry. But I do like
Maxwell, huge chunk of the industry.
I do like Maxwell Prince quite a bit.
Yeah.
Ice Cream Man is okay. I really liked King of Nowhere. And I'm curious to see what kinds of narratives they're going to be exploring here. I think it will be pretty successful. You also have like Razor Blades coming out, because that's the horror anthology thing is very successful right now. And I am here for a horror renaissance. I was wondering, how hard do you think it was to trademark Ha Ha?
I don't know. Cause it's a, what is that called? Onomatopoeia?
Right.
Is that how you say it? Yeah, I don't know. You'd think that would already be trademarked at this point.
I maybe not for comics purposes, but I would even imagine even that. I would think even some Joker stuff is like trademarked Haha, the Joker, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Do you suppose if he did a sequel anthology series, it would be called Womp Womp?
I hope so.
I'm here for the bad jokes, folks. one other thing I want to say. What do you suppose is the chances that... Tynan went to Maxwell Prince and was like, hey, do you want to do a horror story for Razor Blades? And he's like, sorry, I have my own horror anthology coming out.
Probably not zero. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a chance. There's a chance. Yeah.
But I don't think it's... I don't even see the places being competitive with each other or anything.
Nah. Yeah. No way. Also, in indie comics news, late Friday, Dark Horse announced Crimson Flower number 1's coming January 20th, 2021 by Matt Kent, Matt Lesninski, and Bill Crabtree. This is an interesting story about Russian folktales, trained assassins, and government conspiracies. Oh, it's also mind-altering. Sorry, I missed that one. Sounds crazy.
Yeah, you know, Matt Kent, he loves to turn these kinds of things on their heads. So, mm-hmm. I'd be very interested to see what he has to do with it. He's busy.
Yeah, him and Keanu are building a whole universe of godlike superheroes.
He's the only bad idea creator with multiple books.
That's right.
I think he's got a couple of film and movie film and TV adaptations coming out. He's also still writing Bang. Man.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about Bang too.
I like that book.
Very busy guy. Yeah, it's good. It's fun if you like action movies like Die Hard and stuff. So last week we talked about the Department of Truth being one of the highest selling Image Comics titles ever, over 100,000 before it went to second printing. Well, apparently, Donny Cates' crossover has already sold 150,000 orders at FOC, the most orders ever since Danger Girl number 1 in 1998. That's right, this book is selling better and cheesecake.
Good for them. Hey, good for them.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised because just last week we found out the Department of Truth was like crushing numbers, and now this one is already crushing those numbers. Yeah. That's crazy to me. Yeah. I'm also surprised the hype is higher than Department of Truth, but maybe that's because I liked the Department of Truth better. I don't know.
Well, and they think that they did a very good job of getting crossover out in front of people. Donnie has been marketing it for months. Donnie has been marketing crossover harder than he's been marketing Venom. And sending it to people and having people do poll quotes for it on Twitter and in the book and all sorts of other things. So, you know, it shows that that kind of hard work and that kind of networking does pay off. And I'm happy to see any indie book succeeding at this level. That's great. I feel the same way about Department of Truth, though I will agree with you, and we can talk about this at another time, that Department of Truth is the better comic.
Yeah, I think we've both gotten a chance to read both of these, even though Crossover is coming out November 4th. But yeah, it is a good thing for indies. It make you know, when the sales numbers like this come in, I'm like, I wonder how long Donnie's going to be doing Thor for. If he can make these, because he's obviously making way more money doing crossover with those kind of numbers. Also, it's his own IP, so he can,
And I mean, he's got the God Country movie coming out at some point, and that they seem very go on that. He's written the script. It's Paramount and Lionsgate, I think, that's doing it. Right. So, like, they're going to do it.
For sure. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about crossover on this show because I have thoughts.
Yeah, me too.
Also in the news, Stormbreakers, the new up and coming artists that have been working for 15 plus years, at Marvel Comics. Sorry, I had to make a joke, and no one will get that because it may not have listened to last week's show. Marvel unveiled the Stormbreakers program last week, which will be a two-year program with some of the biggest artists at Marvel. And this week they revealed that there will be variant covers by all of these artists coming out in December on some of your favorite books like Spider-Man and Venom and Daredevil and stuff like that. The covers are quite cool. They don't have much title treatment. Actually, they have no title treatment. And they're all kind of stylized to really heighten your senses as far as the style of each artist. Mm-hmm. And each one is quite unique in that way.
Kind of flexing a new style. Like Juan Cabal's cover doesn't necessarily look like the stuff that he did in All New Wolverine or the stuff that he did in Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. So I don't know if they told them to like, hey, just do whatever you want or really expand your range. Because I would say like, Natasha Bustos and Juan Cabal's, they don't necessarily look like what you would expect from those creators.
Right.
So that's kind of neat, too. Like
Joshua Caceres looks like it could have been done by Olivier... what's his name? Shoot. He does... he does that book with Millar at Image Comics.
I don't know the one.
I forget his... The Magic Order. Oh, Olivier Coipel.
Mm.
It kind of has that like hyper detailed, cool, like atmospheric, shadowy work.
Yeah.
You're right. They must be trying to like flex a little bit in these covers to be like, check it out.
They said, hey, you're going to be doing variant covers as part of this Stormbreakers thing. And maybe independently, all of the artists were like, okay.
Right.
Watch this.
That is pretty cool. That's a cool idea. I like that. I like that they're doing something with the group. Because usually I think... I can't even remember with the Young Guns. Did they do stuff like this? They must have, but I just forgot.
They gave all of the Young Guns last year or 2 years ago a one shot at least. Because there was a really good, I remember there was a really good Silver Surfer one shot with Javier Garon. And then I think all the other creators had one shots also. It's just Stealth Fourth. This person is exclusive.
I'm not a variant cover person, so like I only see them when they're on the internet. I'm not going into the shops constantly either. Yeah. So these kind of things fly by so easily for me. I'm wondering if that's something that happens to other people. I'd love it if Comixology, what if they started doing like, for an extra 50 cents, you can get all the variants for that week's issue.
That would be cool.
Of course, it's digital, so it's not like as tactile.
Yeah.
I don't know. Speaking of tactile, TKO's third wave is now up for pre-order. You can get all, what is it, three books? I think it's three.
Lonesome Days, three Savage new books. Knights, The Pole, and Red Fork. They also have a prose book called Blood Like Garnets. Oh, actually, it's six books.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven? Seeds of Eden, Night Train, and The Father of All Things?
So, because those three are comics as well, and then Blood Like Garnets is TKO's first prose book.
So six comics and
one prose book. I saw people on Twitter yesterday just buying this line outright.
Makes sense.
Posting a picture of the purchase, so they're doing well.
Yeah.
I have some concerns about TKO's marketing. And mostly it's like around there, they do a very good job marketing the books once they're out, but the awareness campaigns, so to say, are maybe lacking, especially for creators that I follow. And then I'm like surprised, like, oh, I follow Pacandell and Orlando and I follow news about them and I didn't hear about this, which is really weird. But TKO does a better job once they're out, and they sent us some to review. And I got to say, I was really impressed with the format. And with the quality.
Nice feel.
Yeah.
You're so right. Like, Alex Pakendell's, like, I know way more about Giga than I ever, I still don't know anything about Red Fork, really, besides what we talked about on the show a few weeks ago.
Right.
But yeah, maybe it's like a grassroots thing. Like, TKO's like, we'll let people talk and the buzz will just sell the books for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hey, who am I to say word of mouth doesn't work? Because I saw multiple friends of mine get peer pressured into buying the line yesterday on Twitter.
Really? So, oh my god, that's bullying. That's bullying. You need to call out bullying wherever you see it, even when it comes to comics and buying them. Well, speaking of selling, in our next segment, Top Books of the Week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite books out this week. Mm-hmm. Forrest, what was your second favorite comic of the week?
So my second favorite comic of the week was Warhammer 40K, Marnaeus Khalgar number one. a sentence in and of itself. This was written by Kieran Gillen with art by Jason Burrows. Hey, I wrote an article about this with my friend Justin Partridge for Xavier Files. We did the whole conversational column thing about this comic, and you can go check that out. I wrote at length. I think one of my segments is like 5 paragraphs. So really got into the nitty-gritty about it. But I will say here for the purposes of the podcast, Kieran Gillen has done a very good job of making the seemingly insurmountable Warhammer 40K universe accessible. It is legendarily dense, and it is legendarily full of a community that doesn't want to welcome new people.
Why is that?
At least the tabletop war game, at the very least. And it's just because of neckbeardy fans being neckbeardy fans.
Got it.
But and it also has a high entry point. It's very expensive to buy the models, to assemble them, to paint them, to learn the rules, to buy the rule books, to play the game. But maybe not as many people know that 40K has a very expansive prose library, too. They have an entire publishing arm called the Black Library that just releases Warhammer 40K novels. And you have folks like Kieran Gillen, Dan Abnett, other Cy Spurrier has written some. So very notable comics writers have dipped into that universe or are fans of that universe. And I think Gillen has structured Marnaeus Khalgar to be kind of the connection between those two groups, right? You'll have Gillen and Abnett and stuff go off and write very serious, lengthy prose novels or short stories, anthologies, whatever. And then you have comics, their comics works kind of existing separately. But I think that Killen is trying to leverage this Marvel opportunity to create a connection between the two. I think Marnaeus Khalgar is a very good character to be doing that with. He's the chapter master of the Ultramarines, which they are the blue and gold space marines that I think most people think about when they think of Warhammer 40K. But his backstory, this character's backstory, has never been explained in full. So Gillen has obviously been given quite a bit of carte blanche to tell that story, and to be able to do so for such an important character, I think is really, really cool. Like, it's cool that Marvel and Games Workshop are working together to this degree. It's cool that they trust the creative team. They did a very good job of making this a unique story that caters to fans that already know the material, but also to fans that have totally felt like there was too big of a hurdle to get into 40K in general.
Does Gillen play? He does, right?
Yeah.
I wonder how he got the gig. Did he just show like a picture of all of the figurines he has?
I don't know. Between this and Eternals, you know, he seems to be kind of back with Marvel. So maybe it was just two things lining up, but I'm very excited by this. I had some issues with the first issue, notably that I don't know that yourself, Dave, you were kind of confused about some of the other characters. And I don't think, I really do think it's doing the data sheets thing, which is very obviously lifted from Ten of Swords or from the whole Hoxbox Docs line. And I think that they could have gone and made the data sheets a little more expository, or they made the data sheets kind of all about the planet that this story is taking place on, and it probably would have been beneficial to do the Heretics or the Chaos Marines as one of those data sheets, because I know you were confused about that.
It was like, why should I care kind of a thing.
And I think that, to a degree, the narrative is leaning into the, like, satire of fascism that 40K capitalizes on by saying, like, oh, it doesn't matter, they're Heretics, we're going to kill them. Who cares?
Free thought's
not important. Guns are important. Which is another thing I'd like to say is the narrative does a very good job of not glorifying violence, gore, guns, those sorts of things. The machismo that is inherent in the 40K universe, metatextually. Mm-hmm. Like, Gillen isn't saying, hey, all this shit is really cool because it's super violent and masculine and gory. He's saying these things are important to the characters in the fiction. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a very delicate tightrope, but I trust Gillen to continue telling those stories. It'll be interesting to see if he gets kind of a line editor role and if he can get Abnett to do more and stuff, because they are very storied creators over in that realm too.
As long as they can sell enough books, I suppose. Yeah, you wrote a really good article. It was really dense.
I
did a review as a, you know, opposite spectrum. I don't really know anything about Warhammer besides how cool all the little figures are. And I thought it was pretty easy to get into it. relatively speaking. I mean, like you just said, though, there were things where I was like, kind of would have been nice to know a little bit more about this or this or this to have context.
Yeah, maybe
it's a 5-issue mini.
Maybe they'll get to it. Just been a data page at the front that explained the stakes.
Yeah.
Right. But also, you know, I think that they introduced some villainous characters right at the end, and maybe that's what the next issue is for. You have to be very cognizant of kind of spoon-feeding all of this lore to people, because it is probably one of the densest properties in existence.
Right, exactly, yeah. As a new reader, it didn't feel overwhelming at all, really, except for the map of the galaxy, because I was like, what am I even looking at here? This is huge.
That may have been the one that I would have replaced.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Yeah, because if you supplied the context and then like maybe by issue 3 you show the map of the galaxy, that would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah. So I'll be very curious to see if they've already written something that expands line wide for the end of the 5th issue, or if they're kind of waiting to see how it does. I have thoughts about where they could go from here already, so that's great.
I'm very curious to see if this is, remains on your top books of the week each
issue. I as of right now, I'm very warm on it. I had some concerns, but overall I liked it. I definitely want to shout out Jason Burroughs and the colorist whose name I can't remember, Hava. They did a very good job of making it. It's a dystopian, war-torn world, but the book is colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't make it all gray and black and dirty. Like, lay filters over all the pages, and I appreciate that.
The blood splatter effects are phenomenal.
It's good. It looks good.
When Marty is just pulling that person in half, I was like, "Oof, that's a strong hand. don't shake that guy's hand. Yeah. It's dangerous." Moving on, my second favorite book of the week was Swamp Thing: Twin Branches by Maggie Stiefvater and Morgan Beam. This is a graphic novel, so kind of a cheat in a way. You get so much more story, so it can do more with the storytelling. But as an OGN, this is a really fascinating take on Swamp Thing. Don't expect Swamp Thing in this book, but expect some really cool science elements in regards to whether or not plants think, how do plants communicate, and actually giving examples of how we actually in nature can see nature actually communicating in its own way. This is not what the book's about, though. It's about two twins, one of which is doing a lot of research and lab work to get into college using plants. And then his brother, he is an introvert, and his brother is an extrovert who just is the life of the party and wants to get his brother out of the lab. And so the story, it takes a dark and twisted turn with some pretty gnarly animals, beasts, if you will. And it's all kind of, there's a subtextual story here about being an introvert and like learning how to communicate with others. And this character in the start can really only communicate with plants. And so there's an interesting arc there about them opening up. Meanwhile, there's really cool supernatural science fiction-y stuff going on with his lab work, but also these monsters start showing up. And so it's not only an entertaining story with really cool supernatural science fiction-y ideas, but also an interesting journey for this character, a unique teen character who needs to know themselves a little bit better by the end.
I think that is when Swamp Thing is at its best.
Which part?
When you can have a character-driven story within a world of, like, absolutely ridiculous concepts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You need that grounding. Yeah, I would say you need that grounding for 40K, too.
Stiefvater, like, mixing in real science, it's basically told via captions in some really cool visual ways. Every 30 or so pages, you get this real science, which really does ground the book and makes it feel like it could really happen. You don't have crazy dog, plant, monsters showing up on every page.
Yep.
I could totally see a teenager getting into this, but really all ages. I don't think it's for really young kids, though. I mean, there's some swearing and some scary imagery in there, but as you said earlier in the show, DC's young adult books are just always phenomenal.
Yeah, I have a real fondness for them. And I hope that they survive the kind of restructure.
Yeah, because I forget. Did they cancel DC's Zoom? They did, right?
So reportedly, they were canceling Zoom and Ink and restructuring Black Label into the main line.
Right.
But so much has changed since that was originally reported. We don't really know.
Right, they've never really said anything one way or the other. Well, that was my second favorite book. What is your favorite
book? My favorite book of the week is Hellions number 5, written by Zeb Wells with art by Carmen Carnero. A hilarious, charming, and yet dark and seedy book, which is maybe what you would have come to have expected from Hellions 5 issues in. I will say that Wells has done a fantastic job of folding this story and this group of characters, who I did not expect would maybe fare that well in Ten of Swords, into the narrative thrust for Ten of Swords. Primarily by kind of stapling Mr. Sinister to them at the hip. And he writes Sinister the way I want Sinister to be written for forever. There's recurring bits about his cape. He pulls a peasant to the side and says, "I normally have a cape, you know."
That's so funny. The guy who doesn't even know who he is, never seen him in his life.
all sorts of stuff like that. I find it very funny, but then you also have this kind of like dark undercurrent that's like, oh yeah, these characters are outcasts, or these characters don't operate well in a team, and it may be because Empath does stuff like ask Grey Crow to be his pet.
Dude, Empath's the worst.
Empath is the fucking worst. I love how the book, too, treats Empath like he's the fucking worst.
Right, even the worst of the other characters hate his guts.
When he gets reborn, the other characters are like, maybe you could go out the back.
He's like literally spitting on eggs for future mutants to be born.
And so like, I think Wells is writing a story that is not, it is sympathetic to these characters, but it also puts their flaws on display. And it kind of contextualizes why they haven't maybe had traction in other stories outside of kind of villainous roles. And I think that that's very interesting.
Yeah.
There's one bit where I love Nanny. I think right now, if someone asked me who my favorite mute was, I might say Nanny. Or Nanny and Orphan Maker together. There's one bit where Havoc is like trying to have a structured conversation about their mission, which I don't want to spoil. And Nanny starts singing to Orphan Maker to calm him down. And the page just ends with Havoc saying, "All right, I think we're getting a little in the weeds." Like, really good.
It's so unique. Yeah. You don't have characters like Nanny in any comic
this
book.
This book has such a different voice. Yeah, it's really great. I look forward to reading every Hellions issue, whether they lean more towards the character-driven horror drama or towards the silly. This one definitely leans harder towards the silly, but man, it's pitch perfect.
In my review on aptcomics.com, I said it was hilarious dark theater, and I think that's accurate.
I think that's very... It very much is the comedy tragedy.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I can't wait to read the next issue. It was going to be my favorite issue of the week, but I ended up reading something even better.
Tell me about it.
It's The Magic Fish by Trung Le Guen. This is a original graphic novel by Random House Graphic. Again, kind of a cheat in a sense, in that it's, you know, 300 pages or so. This is a story about a Vietnamese boy, a little boy, who wants to come out, but is worried about coming out to his parents, who basically fled Vietnam when they were younger. And it's just so poignant. It's so beautiful. It mixes in three fairy tales. And this little boy reads the fairy tales with his mother, and they go back and forth because the main character only knows English traditionally. His mother traditionally and only knows Vietnamese, so they share this fairy tale together, one reading in Vietnamese and one reading in English, sort of teaching each other the language. And each fairy tale kind of connects to this boy's personal journey to come out, but also his mother's personal journey of losing her identity as a Vietnamese person, losing her connection to where she came from and where she grew up. And the fairy tales are beautifully done. The art in the entire book is just beautifully done, like something out of a storybook, out of like Brothers Grimm classical storytelling.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And what's sort of fascinating is these fairy tales. I don't want to spoil them too much, but each one kind of connects to this story. And the first story, it's almost like Cinderella. There's a character who has three magic rings that can create dresses, and we learn that she actually befriends this prince. But she's hiding her identity, pretending to be a boy that works in his kitchen. And then he meets her, though, at these balls where she has this beautiful, gorgeous dress. And then the next day he goes to his best friend, who he doesn't know is actually her, and they connect in this other way. There's another story that with a evil stepmother who sort of tortures this little girl. And there's an interesting idea there about sort of connecting with others. And then the third story is a mermaid story about a mermaid who wants to sort of fall in love with this man, this human, but she's not allowed to, of course, because she's a mermaid. And she, it's sort of like the Little Mermaid. She gives up being a mermaid so that she can fall in love. But if she doesn't fall in love with this man, she basically loses her ability to be like a human being. But she also can't speak. So there's this story in there, and she actually goes to this oracle, and the oracle tells her, you have a desire to be other than what you are, and this could be your undoing. So it connects to the main character, this little boy, who wants to come out, but can't. And one of the most amazing elements of this book is he can't come out, because in Vietnamese, there's no word for coming out to his parents. So he's actually having a difficulty communicating this. There's a terrible moment like midway through
where... Don't spoil it all. I haven't read it yet.
I'm not going to spoil it all.
You just sent it to
me. I'm going to spoil it all. But there is a moment where a character tells the boy, all the parents... I want to just read this one part. All the parents I've counseled describe the heartbreak of their children coming out the same way. It always feels like a death in the family. And it's just... Man. It just makes me so emotional even talking about it. And then the ending is so beautiful. This is going to be on my top books of the year. It's just totally beautiful. Amazing book. Amazing visually. It's just, it's beautifully done. I'm a sucker for stories within stories too, and fairy tales in stories. And this one has three of them. There's other deeper meanings in this book I haven't even touched upon. It's just an amazing work. Totally read it.
Neat. I will check it out. I mean, like I said, you just sent it to me, so I was nervous about the spoilers. But yeah, it sounds great. It sounds very effective. I definitely and rich and resonant. And you know, obviously, I have some feelings about some of those topics. So
yeah, and you know, it's not just a coming out story too. It's also about the mother character and how she's kind of feels this like guilt of like leaving behind her culture. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating how it all mixes together. It's a book that I'd read more than once just to understand the subtext.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Moving on, top books for next week. We're going to talk about our top book we're looking forward to reading next week. Forrest, what are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to what I think is the conclusion of Skull Digger and Skeleton Boy.
It's not. It's not. There's one more.
There's one six? More. Yep. It's weird. Why did they do it that way?
I don't know. I only know because I flipped through it and I saw at the end it says to be concluded.
Oh. All right, well, I'm looking forward to what is not the conclusion of Skull Digger and Skeleton Boy with issue number 5 by Jeff Lemire and Tansy Zonjic. This is definitely going to be a book that we talk about in our year wrap up. A fantastic, tight, dark superhero story. It is maybe the best expansion of the Black Hammer universe that Lemire has done thus far, I think. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the Cosmog and Colonel Weird and all that type stuff, but I'm very, very fond of this, and it's kind of reinvention or flip remix of like the Dark Knight Rises style of storytelling, and how it subverts some of those expectations. And then, of course, like the incredible visual storytelling that Tansy is doing.
So good. It's going to be taught in college courses, I think. My most anticipated book of the week is Catwoman number 26 by Ram V and Fernando Blanco. They basically, there was one issue before this where they kind of introduced a whole new ballgame for Catwoman. And now we're going to dive in full force because I think the last issue was like an anthology. It had like two other stories in it. Basically, Catwoman has a new crew of young thieves. And she's sort of like the leader of this crew of thieves. And they all live together in a house. That's about all I'll say, but it's a kind of a cool little twist, because let's think about this for a second. Wait a minute. There's a Bat family, right? And he's got all these Batman characters like Batgirl and Nightwing and stuff. Well, now maybe Catwoman's going to get a thief family. So that's actually my theory. I don't know if that'll actually happen, but it is kind of cool that we're expanding Catwoman's supporting cast, because typically Catwoman's been a loner.
Yeah.
you know, and that makes sense for a thief character. But now, you know, we're expanding a little bit. And of course, Ram V is one of the best writers in the industry right now. And I'm just really excited. Oh, and Fernando Blanco is amazing. Didn't he draw the Midnighter book that Orlando was doing? I think he did.
I think that that's right. Yes.
And those, that book was just gorgeous. So well done. So that's why I'm so excited for Catwoman number 26. Moving on, Judging by the Cover, Jr., this is where we're going to talk about our favorite cover art. Out next week, if you go to AIPTComics.com, go to this podcast listing, you can see the covers. I'm going to go first.
Go for it.
I'm picking Spider-Woman number 5, which is the milestone 100th issue of Spider-Woman. And of course, it gets a ton of variant covers. That's the Marvel way. And Scotty Young, who you all know and love as the guy who does those cute little covers with the cute versions of all our favorite characters.
Seller of a million action figures.
Yeah, that's true. On those statues. Yeah. I actually got one for my birthday.
There you go.
This cover uses red as the white space or the blank space where the background, the main color cover is all red, but then we see Spider-Woman jumping in the middle and the red in her costume, her classic red and white and, or sorry, red and black and yellow costume is become invisible where the red is. And I have to say, for a costume that is one of the most sexualized costumes in comic books, he has somehow tapped into making the costume look cool and taking all the sexuality out of it and making this cute little character jumping so awesome. And I think that's just a genius move. I don't know if that was his intention to like kind of remove the sexualization of the costume, but by making her red bleed into the background, it's kind of a cool effect. What is your favorite cover?
No surprise here. My favorite cover of the week is Skull Digger and Skeleton Boy number 5. This is the main cover by Tansy Shonjic. I love the way, if we collected like a gallery of all of our cover picks, most of my picks would be monochromatic, or they would be,
we could do that for the 100th episode
and we'll just read them out loud to people. Plays great on audio. This one is a mostly gray, black and white, cover of Skull Digger's motorcycle with a ridiculous skull emblazoned on the front. But instead of running horizontally or down a street or anything like that, it's running vertically straight up the page. Some great detail and shadow on his boots, and then also like the chain that's hanging off of his costume, and a little white touch of the skeleton on his gloves, and then just the streaks, the yellow like median dividers of the road down either side. So bright yellow.
Yeah, the
yellow
use of
bursts.
Like. There's like little white glints all over it. Well, not all over, but here and there. It's really cool little
effect. It's really cool. It's very momentous, meaning that it looks like it's in motion. And I love that it subverts the kind of typical... It's not doing the Akira motorcycle thing. It's not doing like a character running towards you. It's not doing any of that. It's just going straight vertically, which is very, very cool.
Yeah, it is a cool cover. It's also cool in that... It's so different. Yeah. Like you don't. I mean, where do you put the title?
Yeah,
treatment,
I'm curious about. I'm curious to see how it looks with the title on it. I would maybe go straight for the middle, just like right across his legs, maybe.
Yeah, that way you can see the skull on the top so well. In our last segment, off topic, top shelf. This is where we talk about what we're into right now. That's not comic book related, and it's Force Turn.
Yes. Hello.
Oh my god, it's Forrest. Hey Forrest, thanks for joining us.
My off-topic top shelf pick of the week is the horror comedy wrestler Danhausen.
Okay, a wrestler.
Yes, a wrestler. Cool. Danhausen is very nice, very evil. Danhausen is good. Danhausen is great. You surrender your will as of this date. Danhausen is an independent wrestler who... whose Patreon I have subscribed to out of a great fondness. I bought some merchandise as well. His face paint is a remix of the Pazuzu face from The Exorcist. And he wears a cape with like a giant Baphomet skull on it. And it's kind of like bloody and dirty. And then he pours teeth into people's mouths in the ring. And all of these elements would combine to make you think like, oh, he's like a really try hard horror wrestling character, right? Like he's got all these ridiculous elements so that even if you were watching from ringside, you would get that he's the scary evil villain, except for he's not.
He's like nice comedy in some way.
Yeah. So his entire bit, it's like Elvira by way of The Simpsons.
Huh.
He has all sorts of really fantastic bits. Like he interviews other wrestlers on his Patreon, on a talk show called Goodnighthausen with Danhausen. And every time they swear, he does stuff like say, "No swearing, you'll get taken off the air. Don't get Danhausen taken off TV." and that kind of stuff. It's very much just The Simpsons. Like, his entire character is a reference to, like, the first 10 seasons of The Simpsons. And sometimes he even does, like, he'll just post a picture on Twitter or whatever that is a direct Simpsons reference, but he's doing it. It's a lot of fun. It's a good mix of, I think it is a perfect example of what wrestling can be, which is not just sport, but also theater. He's a guy who tried very hard to do the non-painted, he was just tattoo bearded wrestle boy before he kind of found his character. And so he has this very good foundation of technical wrestling that he does in the ring. But the way that he elevates it to a kind of character interaction piece, and especially with fans, like, he'll go to the side of the ring and shout, "Who do you love?" And the crowd returns Danhausen. And those sorts of things. He does a Pee Wee Herman dance on the apron, the outside part of the ring. Like, there's all these things that bring you in, and then he gets to do the technical wrestling stuff.
How do you watch him? Is he like on WWE?
He is not on WWE or AEW. He's an independent wrestler. So is on independent wrestling TV sometimes. He works with a bunch of other promotions like Black Label Pro and some others. But honestly, like, I think the point that I'm trying to get across is that he's so good at character that the wrestling is auxiliary. Like, you could just enjoy Danhausen by following him on Twitter and Instagram. And I think that that's fantastic. So it's a lot of fun. He's also, by all accounts, one of the nicest people in wrestling, which in an industry littered with not very nice or people that you would not want to hang out with or lionize to any degree, a standout. So a very, very nice man, very nice, very evil. I'm enjoying him. I'm enjoying his stuff quite a bit. It's been a real boon during the pandemic. Yeah.
If you were to do a wrestling character, would it be something like this?
I think
this, or?
It would. Yes. It's probably no secret that I mostly like horror. My predilections are all kind of horror. So I think, yeah, I would probably do something similar to Danhausen. Obviously, I don't want to rip his whole thing off. But I would probably be maybe a little bit more horror-leaning than he is. And it's very fascinating to watch his character kind of debut as someone who came out to the ring with, like, a bloody plastic bag wrapped around his face, kind of Laura Palmer style, to the funny, like, Simpsons character that he is now. Maybe that horror stuff wasn't working, and maybe I would soon find out that it wouldn't work for me either. But I just love how different it is.
Right, it's theater,
right?
It is,
yeah.
That's so cool.
My suggestion is to check out Danhausen.
Yeah, it's Danhausen AD, at Danhausen AD on Twitter. And apparently he just got engaged.
He's been married. That's his pinned tweet.
Oh, that's 2018.
I have
sorry.
To say that I love that his character is evil demon man who wants human dollars to buy a blimp. And also he breaks character just to be a total wife guy. Like, it's very funny. Good. It's very good.
Right. You could further connect with him in that way, too.
I am a total wife guy. It's true.
Well, that's it for us. This is episode 94. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked it, like, subscribe, tell your friends.
Write a review. Wow. Yes. Wear your mask.
Wear your damn mask.
Bye.
We'll see you next week.